Prestige, the editor-in-chief of GoDucks.com. Follow on Twitter, but you got to pay attention. You got at Duck Football. You can check out at GoDucks Mosley. Either way, clearly he's still riding high after the Penguins won last night, beat Nashville 4-2. We welcome in Rob Mosley. Rob, always appreciate your time, my friend. How you doing?
Hey, Rob.
I'm a little tired. It's been a long day, but it's been an exciting day, so well worth it. Absolutely.
A little something different this year. All eyes always on the current class, and we know most won't see the playing field this season. So let's look at some of the red shirts from last February. You know, fans, media, we don't see practice, but, you know, the scout team, the red shirts, the guys who play Jake Browning or Solomon Thomas. I guess first a general question. How are those players viewed and, I guess, appreciated by teammates, coaches, and those within the program?
Well, the guys who make up the scout team are invaluable. I mean, you know, nobody embodied that more last year. I mean, the guy who played Jake Browning and pretty much every other opposing quarterback was Jeff Locke, who a year earlier was starting games for the Ducks, and then as a fifth-year senior was, you know, all the way down to being a scout team guy, you know, because, you know, the struggles he endured late in that season, but then also the emergence of the transfer into Dakota Prukop and then the emergence of Justin Herbert. So, you know, Locke's essentially busted all the way down to the scout team and then just, you know, takes it like a champ and goes to work every day and tries to make the defense better. So, yeah, I mean, you can't do anything but respect a guy who kind of swallows his pride and just wants to help the team get better, even if it means, you know, accepting what you know, externally is considered a lesser role. So, yeah, I mean, those guys are invaluable, and Locke totally embodied that last year.
There's a couple guys on campus already that have enrolled. Kind of curious just of what your if you've even seen much of them already of – Thomas Graham and Jordan Scott and Adam Stack, and maybe if they, obviously they're not playing right now, but their importance of getting here early and at those positions where they could possibly see the field. What are your thoughts on those three guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously the earlier you can get here, the better, as long as it's a guy who's mentally ready to handle the jump to college at a young age. And, you know, a guy like Jordan Scott, you know, the way they talk about him in the classroom, apparently he's just an exceptional student. So, you know, you think he's a guy who's got some maturity to him, but, you know, I look at Graham, who's a corner, and Scott, who's a nose tackle, and those are positions where, you know, if you're looking for guys in this class who might have an immediate impact, you know, given Austin Malawat is gone, there's probably going to be a chance to earn some reps at nose tackle, and if Jordan Scott's here already, you know, maybe he's a guy that does that. By the same token, you know, I think we can all agree that the cornerback position for Oregon is probably up in the air.
Right.
As much as any other going into spring, just because of the struggles there and some of the inconsistencies last year. So you look at somebody like Thomas Graham, who was so highly rated, you know, if he can play up to his ranking and also benefit from that extra 6 months on campus, you know, ahead of some of the other guys in his class, you know, maybe he's a guy who could see the field early as well.
Let's get to one of the quarterbacks, Terry Wilson out of Del City, Oklahoma, attended that Elite 11 quarterback camp. Two prominent rating systems had him the second-best recruit in Oklahoma. Now with a year of football under his belt, kind of what's the buzz as far as how he's progressed and ready maybe to make a contribution?
Yeah, I mean, he was an interesting guy last year because he was the third-string guy, you know, a guy who made road trips, practiced up with the travel squad, you know, wasn't a scout team guy, but didn't get as much reps as Herbert and Prukop, so didn't get quite the practice seasoning maybe they would have liked to, but they wanted him to play up with that group because he was the next in line if they needed somebody to play in a game. But you know, I think you look at him athletically, and a lot of people look at the offense Coach Taggart ran at South Florida and wonder if Wilson might be the best quarterback on this roster to run that style of offense. Now, of course, Justin Herbert's body of work last year speaks for itself, and you got to think the coaching staff looks at that and says, hey, this is a guy who can play too, and maybe the offense needs to be tweaked to Herbert's strengths. But, you know, I think given the coaching change, the quarterback position this spring will be maybe a little more interesting than it might have been otherwise. I think, you know, under the previous staff, you go into spring thinking, hey, it's Herbert's job, no question about it. And, you know, maybe any other veteran quarterback on the roster maybe looking, you know, for greener pastures somewhere else. Now, instead, given the coaching change and possible stylistic changes offensively, you know, if you're a quarterback other than Herbert, you may still think you've got a shot to maybe unseat him and be a guy who fits a little better. And if I'm Wilson, you know, he's got to think that's his opportunity to come in and try and shine in April and earn himself a shot come fall.
With three tight ends that were seniors last season, and let's be honest, at the end of the year, they were probably three of the best receiving targets this program had. When you take into account of the injuries that happened, those guys have graduated. There's two left on scholarship, so that made it a priority for this class. And no tight ends have been signed. We don't know if anyone can do a position change or of that nature. So that leaves the scout team and walk-ons to possibly fill a big hole next season. What have you seen from the tight ends that we don't know about? Like we've seen a little bit of Jake Breland. Cameron McCormick redshirted last season, but then after that, it's a big mystery at tight end. What are your thoughts at that position going into spring football?
Well, I think a couple of points. One, I think there's no doubt they would have liked to sign a tight end in this group, and it didn't work out. You know, they certainly targeted, you know, at least one prominent guy, right, and probably a couple, and didn't get him in the fold. I think, two, the way things shook out last year with some of the injuries at receiver, you know, Devin Allen up and down the board, you know, Royce Freeman getting banged up. Last year's team really leaned on its tight ends heavily, you know, played multiple tight ends primarily. Primarily a two tight end offense the latter half of the season with Farrell Brown, Johnny Munt, Evan Bayless. You know, that offense leaned on its tight ends way more than it might have otherwise, and way more than you'd expect the team to going forward. But that said, given the loss of those three guys and not signing a guy today, you'd really expect that to be the case. You know, you'd really expect to see more maybe two-back stuff, three and four receiver sets, you know, maybe go without a tight end sometimes. But as for the guys who are back, I think Jake Breland is a guy, you know, they knew from the moment he got here he was a guy who could really run. He was banged up a little bit as a redshirt, but I think showed last year some flashes that he can really get down the field, stretch the field, you know, as a guy who can line up in the slot. And run and catch and be a threat that way. Cameron McCormick, you know, a great athlete, I think has some of that same potential. What you don't see is a real thumper on the line of scrimmage. I mean, when Farrell Brown wanted to, he was an exceptional blocking tight end. He was a little inconsistent at times, but he was dominant when he put his mind to it. So, you know, I think they're going to miss that element, at least at the beginning of the year, until somebody can prove they can step up and fill it. But, you know, kind of like last year when they leaned on the tight ends because they were thin at other positions, you know, you just adjust accordingly. And if they're a little thin at tight end going into next season, then you just lean more heavily on the running back spot and the receiver spot, which, you know, if some guys at receiver work out in this class look like they're a lot deeper than they were a year ago.
You know, you kind of mentioned him in passing, and interestingly enough, when we were talking about you coming on, of all the guys from last year, the one whose name has popped up the most that people are like, ask him about this, is Cam McCormick. He was a really highly thought of recruit. I think 24/7 had him the top tight end prospect in like the Western United States. I know he was coming off an injury his senior year in high school, but you know, what kind of progress did he make last year? And you know, how close is he to kind of filling in for the trio that left?
Yeah, I mean, the injury lingered from high school and lingered into last year, and I think they were careful with him because they knew they could be. Because of the depth of the senior class and Breland coming up the pipe, and even Ryan Bay, a guy who's a walk-on guy who earned some reps at tight end in the middle of last year. But, you know, towards the end of the season, he started to really show some flashes, and I think, yeah, there's high hopes that this offseason and then come spring, he's a guy who's going to have an opportunity and hopefully takes advantage of it. But, you know, not a guy where you looked at him every day in practice last year and said, okay, he's going to fulfill all that promise, simply because I think they were really cautious with him. They really wanted to make sure that knee injury was healthy and healed up and good to go. So, you know, I'm really looking more towards the future with him and excited to see what he can do in the spring.
One of the perks I think you get of your role at Oregon is the inside access to some programs. And you tweeted it today of how signing day was so different than last year. You were listening to Tupac over the sound system this morning. What was signing day like inside the areas you were able to see? You know, if you can open up the secret information here a little bit and give us like a glean of what was signing day like under Taggart his first time around with this class?
Yeah, I'm writing a big feature on that right now that hopefully will be on the website in the next hour or two. But, you know, a couple things. One, just the energy from Coach Taggart. I mean, literally at 4:01 a.m., he's going, okay, is the fax machine plugged in? Is compliance good to go? Because the letters were going to start pouring in from the Florida guys who could start at 7 their time and 4 here. And he's, you know, like about 20 minutes later, they got a few of the Florida letters. There was a little bit of lull. Some of the assistants start looking at their phones. It gets a little quiet. And Taggart's like, it's too quiet in here. Let's turn on some music. Let's go. And suddenly there's some hip-hop playing. Tupac at one point, like I tweeted. A couple minutes after that, Big Papa, by Notorious B.I.G. plays. And like half the staff is like rapping along to the song, which under the previous staff, for all its merits, you didn't have a whole lot of guys rapping along to Notorious B.I.G. when it came over the PA. But the other thing too was for the previous staff, the way they chose to one of the things they chose to do today was have the first real big major off-season conditioning workout for the veterans. So signing day, you know, it was primarily West Coast guys, so they'd come in. They'd get all the letters in, you know, an hour or two, and it was, you know, it was kind of a formality. You knew who you were going to get. You got them, boom. And then it was, all right, let's get down to the Mashovsky Center and work out the current roster. And it was really a day to kind of kick off the next upcoming season and set the stage for that. Well, this staff didn't schedule anything with the current roster. It was all about recruiting. Any lull they had today between letters of intent from the 2017 guys, they were already talking about 2018 guys. I mean, they're getting their list finalized for who they're going to offer for next year's class. And there was, you know, about 5:30 this morning, there was a lull, but you know, between the East Coast guys already being in and the West Coast guys not being able to sign yet. And Mario Cristobal and Jim Leavitt are sitting across from each other at the table talking about 2018 guys and bringing up this name and that name and who they should go visit and, you know, when they'd want to contact them and all that. So, you know, how legit, you know, various prospects were based on some of the buzz they'd heard. So, you know, today was all about recruiting for this staff, you know, this year's class and next year's class. You know, I think when this staff was put together, you know, the recruiting credentials are really what jumped out. And I think, we got to see today a little bit why that's the case. I mean, that's a huge, huge, huge focus for these guys.
Yeah, I
don't know. Wait a minute. Rob, don't get Preem started on 2018, man. I don't ask you for much.
Well, I'm sorry, but I was gonna say that I'm pretty sure during that lull you mentioned of 5:30, that's when it happened of Jimmy Doherty, the receivers coach, called some kid in Florida and extended an offer for 2018. I mean, you would have maybe some better insight into it, but it seems like this staff is willing to treat two classes at the same time, whereas the previous one was, you know, 80% of their focus was on that current group because they are active for 2017, but then today, you know, Taggart was calling recruits and other coaches were offering recruits for 2018.
Yeah, I don't think there's any disputing. These guys are casting a little wider net and being a little bit more aggressive in extending early offers. I just think, you know, the record speaks for itself the last 2 months in that regard, and that will prove to be the case with the next class as well. You know, they're just taking a different tack, a different philosophy from the last staff. You know, the result, you know, or the merits of that will be borne out on the field right in the next 3-4 years. But, yeah, and you know, there's no doubt that some things philosophically are different between the last staff and this one.
Let's wrap with this, Rob. One of my first favorite Duck players when I arrived here was Chad Cota. His nephew, Brady Breeze, although it sounds like a drink you'd get in an open-air bar in like Malibu. Central Catholic, Rivals had him a top 10 safety in the country. Is his future at safety? How close do you think he is to maybe breaking through in a secondary that kind of has a lot of questions?
Yeah, I think he's a guy, you know, as much as anybody on the scout team that consistently impressed me last season, for what that's worth. I mean, I know about as much about football as the next guy on his couch, you know, watching games, but watching practice every day, which I think media will have a chance to do more and you know, hopefully see some of the same things I did and verify, you know, some of the observations I had. You know, he's a guy who on the scout team was consistently a thorn in Justin Herbert's side. They're buddies, and Breeze would usually pick him off a couple times a week and let him know about it. You know, they had a little back and forth they'd go, but Breeze too is a guy who's just not afraid to hit somebody. You know, every Friday the last staff would have a 10-minute scrimmage prior to the formal practice for the travel squad. They'd have a 10-minute scrimmage for the scout team guys who weren't going to play in the upcoming game. And they'd go live for 10 minutes, and they'd hit. And Brady Breeze was a guy who was not afraid to come up and thump people if they went over the middle. And so you started to look at what the safety position looked like in the future. And given Brennan Schooler's emergence as a guy who, is a center fielder, plays over the top, can range all over the field and, go get balls and bracket guys with a corner. You think about pairing him with a guy like Breeze, who's a big physical guy who maybe underneath could patrol the over the middle and wouldn't be afraid to run with and hit a tight end or somebody else coming over the middle. It's interesting to think of Schooler and Breeze as a safety tandem and the way they complement each other. I mean, obviously we'll see how that plays out the next year or two, but I think he's a guy who I really look to have an impact in this secondary in the next year or two.
Everything we heard about the 2015 offensive line recruiting class, the Lemieux, the Alios, that Throckmortons, that group, Hanson, they seem to live up to the hype and maybe even exceed it a little bit this past season. So it was a little interesting to me, especially with the fact that Tyrell Crosby came back, that Oregon went out and got a junior college transfer offensive lineman. And not only was he a JUCO guy, he was the best JUCO offensive lineman in the country. How do you see this line shaping up next season? And obviously a JUCO guy is going to pick a school because he thinks he can go in and play. I mean, is there movement along the line you could maybe see happening, some position changes of guys moving from inside to out, what's your take on this offensive line going into spring?
Well, I think two things. I mean, I think one, those young guys played, beyond their years a little bit last year. But I don't think offensive line play was a strength of the offense last year. I mean, given the fact that they were so young, they held up pretty well in general. But, it's a group that still had some growing to do and is going to be a lot better in the next couple years.
No question.
And I think the backups behind those guys were a question mark as well. So, if I'm Mario Cristobal, the new offensive line coach, I come in and say, okay, yeah, there's some potential a year or two down the road for that group coming back after starting last year, but I'm not sure I feel great about my depth because, when they had to go to the backups, the play wasn't always real consistent. The other thing is, there is no, as far as from what I observed today, there's no position coach more excited about an individual recruit than Mario Cristobal is about Moore. Just really thinks this guy's got a ton of talent, knows that he's got a lot of work he's got to do in the weight room, but he's a big guy who's a great athlete. He's got, 3 years to play here, but he's also got that 1 year of junior college experience at a pretty high level of junior college that does kind of help ease his transition from high school to this level. So he's got really high hopes for Moore's potential, and so you throw one more guy into the mix. The odds of getting through a season with five starting offensive linemen are not very good. There's already one to replace in Cameron Hunt. So you plug Crosby in, you maybe shuffle Aiello around and Throckmorton or whoever. Yeah, you've got five good guys with starting experience. But, if you can bring in one more guy to push those guys, that's great. And also, do you expect to get through a full season with those five guys? That'd be great, but history shows that's maybe unlikely, too. So you just got one more guy to add to this. Added the depth and the insurance policy. So, I think when you can get the number one JC guy tackle in the country, you certainly don't turn up your nose at it.
Rob, always appreciate the time, the input, the information. You could try at Duck Football to follow on Twitter. In a little bit, go to goducks.com and see what Rob has to say about this letter of intent signing day. Always appreciate what you have to offer, Rob. Thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Rob.
All right, take it easy.